You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation, brought to you by Go Wild. If you haven't already, download the Go Wild app wherever apps can be downloaded, or for more information, visit timetogowild.com. If you want to be a part of the fastest growing outdoor community on the web, Go Wild is the social media platform for you. It's the home for hunters and fishermen and outdoor enthusiasts, from hiking and camping to backpacking and more and more and more. You need to check out the Go Wild app today. Sign on and time to go wild.
All right, guys, welcome to another Land and Legacy podcast. This is your host, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye.
And we are joined by special guest, Mr. Blake Hamilton.
Hey, guys.
Blake, I'm trying to think of how to introduce you.
Because there's no good way.
There's no good way. Yeah.
He blows away any introduction.
He's from Alabama.
South Alabama.
And but now you reside in Texas. For the introduction, Blake is a guy that we met a couple of years ago at QDMA National Convention, and very kind of just hit it off immediately because we come from similar backgrounds. We work in similar fields, but we have the same passions.
Yep. And Blake, visions.
And visions and kind of dreams, similar dreams and where we want to go in life. So we automatically just hit it off, and we've been in touch and have – stayed in touch and visited again at QDMA this year. And so we just – it's nice to meet people like-minded with similar visions.
Totally. And
so
and that's the funny part. You know, I think we look at the hunting industry, and there's so much, like, divide, and people are just, I guess, not get along because of brands and this and that. But it's like Blake does a lot of the same stuff, but, hey, we're sitting down at the same table in his office – in Texas, just meeting and talking and seeing what the future holds for consultants all around the country and us.
That's
just,
right.
It's cool to brainstorm with similar-minded people.
So Blake's company, Nature's Eye, is consulting. They do various things, but consulting is one of the biggest ones. And so I think he automatically would group us in, oh, this is like Ford had a podcast and they're interviewing Chevy. Like, this doesn't make sense. But that's not the case at all.
No, it's more like Kia and Ford.
Yeah. I guess we won't say who's Kia and who's Ford.
Oh,
there's going to be
Suzuki.
A lot of laughs on this podcast, too.
For sure. We're going to be redlining this thing like crazy. But, Blake, give us a little bit. You have an interesting background. Kind of walk us through childhood to where you're at now. What were those steps like?
Man, well, I appreciate, you know, first you guys hiring me as a comedian to be on this deal. These tomatoes you guys have in your hand right now is kind of weird and it feels a little awkward, but
yeah,
I'll give you the best Fozzie jokes I could think of. But, man, no, seriously, I appreciate, you know, there's just a brotherhood when you're cut from the same cloth and a culture when you meet an agrarian-minded person that, you know, this age and stage in life, our Rolodex is pretty stacked with friends. You know, after we get out of high school and college, you know, we're not trying to grow that group, but you just meet people that you connect with and share that, those passions for family, spiritual, business, and life. And, man, you guys, echoing what you guys said, you know, we feel the same way. The whole Nature's Eye brand and family does about what you guys do. And, you know, folks get so caught up on, well, aren't they in the same space? Or, you know, hey, it's a big world out there. And, you know, we get really caught up on pay and not purpose sometime. And the purpose is to drive and improve conservation on the largest scale and highest level possible. So, you know, rising tide rises all ships. We're on the same team here, flying the flag for conservation. So it's special for me to be able to sit and, you know, rap with guys like you on and not feel so territorial about, you know, what we do. We share the same love for that and just trying to create a business around it. So thanks for having me. Excited about that. Stepping back, childhood, you know, I grew up in South Alabama, and we had, you know, 15 acres around my house. It wasn't a tremendous amount of land, but it really instilled in me foundationally that it's really how you micromanage property and the treasures you find within it, even if it's within 15 acres. So those treasures for me and micromanaging it was, you know, damming up one end of a drain and creating an ephemeral pool and sawing how the reptiles and amphibians responded to that, and the birds and the vegetation that grew on the banks, and being able to squirrel hunt there and having small mammals such as rabbits and putting in bluebird houses. And, you know, that's managing wildlife.
Absolutely.
You know, I think a lot of folks get discouraged and are, you know, I don't own 1,000 acres or I don't have 100 acres. And, man, I think it's really thinking back to that 15 acre, that 5 acre mindset. How can we micromanage this? Mm-hmm. Because the hunting industry has really, you know, washed my mind in a lot of ways. I'm a big fan of it as a hunter, but also I just think it's about deer and it's about inches. And sometimes, you know, it's about slowing down and appreciating the crackling of a fire, a cool breeze in the morning, or a song of a bird, you know, and that's a nature-based life, which is the foundation of life based on the principles of nature.
People are really quickly seeing why we gel very well in that first, you know,
yeah.
You 5 minutes described, of podcast.
You just described in 2 sentences the 85 podcasts before.
Okay. Well, I've never listened to one.
He's our biggest fan, I swear.
Actually.
That was his comedian joke number one.
Ow. You didn't have to kick me when I said that. I'm sitting right here. Man, that's really the foundation. And, you know, we didn't own any land. Back then, we would just take cane poles, and my dad would help dig up worms in the backyard, and my mother and my father and I would go to a local bridge and brim fish, or, you know, catch fish from, you know, a bridge on Sunday after church and a good family meal.
That's cool.
And that, for us, that was Sundays in the South. And
I think I wrote a song about that.
That's it.
Was that a rap song?
Or no.
Okay, because I thought I knew that one, but I'll stop. So, man, that was really it. That instilled the passion. I went to junior college majored in criminal justice. I wanted to become a law enforcement officer, game warden. Again, just in that conservation space because – I wanted to be able to protect wildlife. You know, one of my favorite quotes is Theodore Roosevelt. It's wildlife in its habitat cannot speak, so we must and we will. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot of what game wardens, conservation officers, Forest Service agents, and consultants are doing, is speaking for the wildlife. So
that's right.
That's why I went into that. I transitioned. I don't know if you guys know this, but had the opportunity one summer to go – do some carpentry work in Canada, you know, from the age of 14 to 21. I actually put stucco on houses and bricklaid and roofed. So
what
I learned some carpentry skills. Quebec.
Really?
Interesting.
And I went up there and I worked at a camp called Grassy Narrows. I was a black bear guide in Grassy Narrows. I lived with the Amish country and helped them frame and with carpentry work on lodges and camps there, and also would help guide walleye and pike fishing trips. And that was
a
moment for me that, you know, I call it now decompressing. You know, there was no phones, there was no communication except within camp and yourself within nature. And sometimes that's the best kind.
Yeah.
And it was a pivotal moment in my life that I needed. So I'm very thankful for a guy named L.C. Steedley, who's still a good family friend, to mentor me in that aspect. And when I left there, he was a big fan of Mississippi State because he had lived near there. I was going to Auburn. Now, I'm probably about to lose a lot of friends on Facebook when I just said that. We're not talking about football here, guys. Sit back down.
Yeah.
We're talking about conservation schools. So they was a great conservation school when I was headed that way, and Mississippi State, for several reasons, became the school I chose, and went to school for forestry and wildlife biology, and just had the opportunity immediately to take a internship position at Mossy Oak Corporate. Started out as a guide on a property they had called Portland Landing, about 14,000 acres in Alabama, and there I learned a culture that I believed in very much, but I began to learn that it was as much about managing people as it was about wildlife.
Sure.
And guiding a teach you, you know, it's client expectations and it's entertainment and relationships. And that's what drives, you know, who we are in life. So, I ended up helping, my boss mentored still a guy, I think a lot of the times, Toxie Hayes. He had a vision to start a nursery called Mossy Oak Native Nurseries. And I was, first employee there. Mm-hmm. We added that team, ended up growing about 90 different species and expanding that as a containerized seedling nursery across the country and learned a lot about branding and marketing and grew a company called Gamekeepers. That was actually a brand being grown at the time. I was able to be a small part of that. And anyway, ended up beginning to learn about the industry and meeting great people in the industry and learn that there is a love and a lifestyle for what we do. And, you know, that lasted about 8 years after I'd graduated from Mississippi State. And then I actually detached from Mossy Oak and had the opportunity to start Nature's Eye, which started out our foundation as a consulting firm. And now we do consulting, we do nature-based media, we do real estate investments, and a real estate company through Mossy Oak Properties. And, you know, but the greatest of all of that story is what I've really learned in the past year. You know, a lot of those was life, and now I call it life and losses because I lost my father, I lost my grandfather, and I lost one of my best friends. Mm. And, man, it really gives you a second gear to show you, remind me of what that 15 acres is all about.
Yeah.
You know, it's enjoying a cool breeze, the crackling of a fire, and the song of a bird. It's the things that God's given us in life that are free and are around us every day. And we get so caught up in, you know, competition within our workspace or social media or, you know, just emotions that, man, the greatest gifts are free to us outside and outdoors and nature. So
that's right.
Our focus is to keep an eye on nature and look at it from nature's eye, not from our eye, and to manage for that. And that can be from, you know, songbirds all the way to white-tailed deer, but it's stepping outside of these industries and thinking more broad scope. And, man, you really ask several times about the historic land use as we spent the past couple of days in East Texas, and you've said, man, what was this historically? You guys get it. I mean, that's really what it's think about is that restoration efforts. Mm. You know, how do we preserve and restore, you know, what was here?
Yeah.
And it's thinking more of that broad umbrella approach. So it's been an awesome time for me. That's kind of my quick story from childhood to now.
Yep.
But it's got me in rooms with guys like you where we can, you know, we can share these things that we love. And still, it still reminds, you know, it's good to step back and think about our foundations and where we come from and what got us to this point now. Yeah. So I appreciate you asking me that.
Yeah, you said something there that was just that now I'm understanding why it's called Nature's Eye. There's kind of a message there that's exactly the core of what your company is. In your name itself. Same thing with Land and Legacy. It's about the land. It's about looking at it through nature's eye, not your own eye. It's about looking for the benefits of the land, what's best for the land, rather than what you think is best for you.
Exactly.
I you see it too much. I'm sure you see it as well, where somebody does something on their land that is trying to be beneficial to them without thinking about what the consequences are to the landscape or to the animals or the plants.
You got it. I mean, you know, they want to engineer it or architect it the way they want it to be, you know, versus the way nature will respond it really being. And just the name you guys have coined, Land and Legacy, speaks volumes to that too, you know. Yeah. Because that's the two things it's about. It's the land, which creates a legacy within the family. So, man, it's all cool stuff. And there's a lot of folks out there that, you know, I think, you know, fly that same flag and share those same beliefs.
No doubt.
And that's just awesome to sit around campfires sometime and just talk about things like that.
That's the cool thing. I mean, I grew up in Virginia. Adam grew up in Missouri. You grew up in South Alabama. But all can share the same childhood experiences and life experiences in the way they've guided us all to come here and sit at this table with the same mindset mm-hmm. of the impact that nature has had on all of our lives. To me, that's incredible. That's amazing. Like you said, though, there's people listening to this right now who are like, I'm right there. You know, they can't physically be right here at the table, but mentally, physically, they are in that same mindset.
Exactly.
That's why I love nature and the connection that it has with everyone involved. And
it is.
We see it. We get a lot of emails from listeners that are like 16-year-old guys, or they're less than 20 years old, and they're dreaming of the day to own their own farm to where they can do all the stuff that we talk about, improve the land for the native landscape or for the native species. And it's just like, those guys are getting it. I've got a question for you, because we come from similar backgrounds, and it sounds like you had this absolute love for the outdoors. You play a lot of video games growing up?
You know, I did. I was a generation of Game Boy, and I was a game. You know, Mario would throw a fireball every now and again. I got to be honest with you.
You were the guy throwing out bananas in Mario Kart, right?
That was actually O'Doyle when I was in high school. He used to pick on me, but yeah, that was Donkey Kong as well.
Right. Oh man, well you shot. I played some video games, but like the thing for me was always outside wiffle ball. Like, and then we would go to the farm. Like that was just like there was a connection where that was, when I think back now on like childhood stories, I don't remember, of course, ADD, which you suffer from as well. I don't remember a lot of the stories.
I love the terminology of suffer within that. So carry on.
But the stories that I remember of the childhood, like going to the farm and being outside, those are the ones that really stick out that I'll never forget. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, there's no doubt. You know, my wife asked me all the time for Christmas, do you want me to get you an Xbox? Or, and I said, absolutely not.
Yeah.
But internally, I'm thinking, I hope she surprises me. Let's be honest. But, well, man, how about your time here in Texas? I tell you, we, you know, there's a lot of drought. There's great Mexican, authentic Mexican food. We've got a tremendous amount of hogs and turkeys everywhere. What do y'all think?
You know, we came down with the, you know, the bulk was come down here and brainstorm. And then, like, the added benefit was, you know, just this incredible, authentic Mexican that you talked up so highly that we never got. And then
you
and
ordered the crazy burrito.
And I was expecting
I'm sorry that you got frostbite from that. That was the only restaurant in town.
Only restaurant in town. And they served us all cold food.
I was the only one who didn't have cold food.
I've never seen anybody get a brain freeze from a burrito.
It was close, yeah.
You know,
my fajita came out and it wasn't even smoking or steaming, you know. It's just like they heated it up in the microwave.
It's authentic.
Nuked it.
Authentic Tex-Mex, I think, is what their sign said.
Exactly.
And that's why you don't see authentic outside of this area.
But what about those hogs, man? I told you we'd put you all over them.
We drove around. We got a little stuck because of all the rain on these muddy, nasty little roads. Didn't even see Adam, you did see a hog.
We saw a hog. Yeah, we saw a hog.
But
y'all should have been here a day earlier. They was biting our ankles off walking down the roads. I had to put new tires on my truck. They kept chewing on them.
Yeah.
They're thick down here.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the stories that could be told from this day-and-a-half trip to Texas. Unreal.
We had a record flood come through. Barely made it out of camp this morning. The roads washed out.
Very true.
Terrible. Very terrible. True. Yeah, we're kind of hoping to come back in January, maybe, depending.
Yeah, good luck with
chase
that.
Some.
Excuse me. Are we still on?
Yeah, we're still on.
Don't worry. Our wives don't listen to us talk and ramble for an hour every week.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I'm sitting here looking at – I'm guessing this is your slogan. It's your land. Let's make the most of it.
Yeah, and I just read this cup as we're having this coffee here, and I saw that, and then I'm looking at your hat about land and legacy. I was like, man, it just all ties together.
Yeah, it does.
Our slogan's for love of the land. Yours is, it's your land. Let's make the most of it.
Exactly. You know, and we've kind of been talking about a new term around here, a nature-based life.
Yeah.
And I had mentioned a minute ago, it's a life based on the principles of nature.
Yeah.
And if we really think about, like, the principles of nature, what is that? You know, it's those of what a tree really is or resembles. And it's grow where you're planted.
Yep.
You know, we're all planted in different areas of life and in different stages of our lives. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important for us to grow, but it's also important for us to coexist with others. So as like we're doing now, mm-hmm. we're in that same, you know, some folks would call it space together, but we can still mutually grow, you know, totally. Just like those trees do. And then,
are you a hippie? I'm kidding.
Just because I have a hacky sack in my hand right now, airwalks and corduroys does not make me a hippie. Okay.
And the fact that you
these are my bongos and I can rock them if I want. But, so yeah, you know, it's coexistent. It's, growing where we're planted. It's being all we can be. And then it's trying to produce some kind of offspring or seed within itself. But, you know, that's really, we're just all living a nature-based life.
That's it. And it's crazy how symbolic, you know, you can make, you know, learn from nature and apply it to your life. And that's exactly right. That's a great parallel to what we're doing here today. But ultimately, that, you know, our life's goal.
Mm-hmm.
You said something earlier, Teddy Roosevelt quote. I'll use a quote or a phrase that I've heard that has always stuck with me, and it's the one that a society grows great when old men plant trees in which the shade they'll never sit in.
Is that Chance the Rapper?
Yeah.
Okay.
Young Jeezy, I believe.
I don't even know these guys. You're more of a, I guess, more of a thug than I am.
I appreciate that. That's one of the nicest things you've ever said to me.
Yeah, that's right.
Thug hippie that eats authentic Mexican.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Tell me a little bit about the land investment. I know we have talked about in the past on past podcasts about transforming land, improving land, but you do something kind of very interesting down here in Texas, I guess across the country, but really in your market here in Texas, you're dealing a lot with not necessarily flipping land, but you have another way of putting it that's totally different than the image of flipping land. Tell me, kind of give me a little bit about what that's like.
Sure. So, you know, if our goal, which is to improve conservation on the largest scale possible, having the opportunity to consult with clients and just share ideas with others is one method to doing that. Another is investing in land, actually developing it, mm-hmm. Improving that, and creating added value because we're still reaching our same goal of improving conservation on the largest scale possible. So some of the different vehicles we have, like through the real estate company, allows us to get first look opportunities at land deals. Internally, we have a company called Nature's Eye Natural Resource Investments, which allows us to invest in some of those land deals. Mm-hmm. We invest in land deals that really we're taking on a project, some that can be a blank canvas or that us as a consulting or development company sees added value in. And so as we invest in those, you know, our latest one, I believe, was 1,500 acres. That'd be a 2-year project. Well, it don't have a road system on it, don't have a lake on it, a pond on it, had any timber management. Land. It's just raw land.
Yep.
So we're able to invest in that land, create a master development plan, improve it or create added value, mm-hmm. and then reposition it.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a lot of folks that has flipped land, you know, and there's a business model for that. For us, it's more about creating that added value, and then the term we use is reposition, because we're repositioning is something better. So the end user or at retail has something that has that value on it. So we're not, you know, we're not buying 100 acres, clear cutting it, and then just flipping it and walking away.
That's right.
You know,
parceling it out
with a mess.
Saying, hey,
exactly.
Now we've got 4 opportunities to sell 25 acres. It's not that.
That's correct.
One of the things,
and it's not said, also going in just putting out a few food plots and hanging a few tree stands and saying that you've made it a deer hunting property and flipping it that way either.
That's correct.
You guys do some stuff that we'll talk about in a second that's really right in line with what we.
And you've seen one this past weekend, Mallard mm-hmm. Point. It's 900 acres that, you know, we go in with an infrastructure and build levees and waterfowl impoundments and road systems. Food plots to create opens a proper timber management, and we're unlocking the property's value. Basically, it's nothing.
It's
that
there.
We've initially done. It's there. You're right. It's just unlocking that value for what it truly is, and then leaving it better than we found it.
That's it.
And that's how we can improve on a larger scale. you know, with that capability.
And giving more people the opportunity to get outdoors. I mean, with that addition opportunity to recreate, that's a conservation really coming full circle. And the term you threw out is developing these properties, and that right off the top of most people's head is going to come across as, what do you mean, like development, like residential, commercial, like industrial? Usually that term is used in that manner, mm-hmm. associated with those terms, but really it is rural land recreational development, turning raw land into something that people can truly come out and enjoy that nature-based life and recreate on. And
exactly.
Like I said, you're simply unlocking that property's potential to allow people to do that.
Yep. And you saw it. And it's to think about it holistically, more so laser focused on to set it up just for hunting. So as you saw from you guys stayed at the showcase farm the mm-hmm. first night. And, you know, I'd mentioned the upper 40 strategy.
Yeah.
Basically what that means is micromanaging in a way that there's something for all folks to enjoy, no matter their age and stage of life or what they feel like they enjoy in the nature-based market. That could be hiking, camping, bike, backpacking, mm-hmm. fishing, hunting, sporting clay. You know, there's something there. So we try to develop those properties for a nature-based lifestyle.
Yeah.
And it's from bird watching, you know, all the way to hunting.
Yep. Yeah. One thing that I notice when you look at the flippers, the land flippers, it's a lot of the very quick hit projects. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they don't even do that. They just basically buy it and turn around and
just
parcel it out, relist it. But what I see with you is there's the similar, very much a plan of attack for long term. It's not something that the first owner is going to benefit from, but if it sells and
switches hands
multiple times, your management is lasting generations down the line. Like, walk me through, you had this project at the home property, your main camp, where the landowner wanted to kind of restore some of that landscape that was there, let's say when Davy Crockett came through. What was that? There's some really cool species coming up, but it's different. If you were to look across the road, there's a difference between the two.
Exactly. So that was the old growth forest. You know, there's no doubt, you know, if someone were to look at it, that those trees, the longleaf pine and the shortleaf and things that are in there, are biologically and economically mature.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm a forester, so as well. So wearing my forestry hat, I would say, hey, we need to cut these. They're going to die from old age, lightning strikes, susceptible to disease and pest. But there's also a brighter mindset to say this is a component of history. There is a large, this vertical structure adds species richness of, you know, mm-hmm. bird habitat.
Yeah.
And then, you know, if this component wants to be preserved, how do we restore or enhance this forest in a way that's still healthy?
Right.
For us, we went in and removed the sweet gum,
mm-hmm.
A percentage of the ash and elm, some of the select species, and then that allowed more sunlight to hit the forest floor, and we was able to burn that under a two-year rotation. So, as you can tell, it's just full of a salad bar. QDMA did their Deer Stewart 2 course there this year, and we spent a lot of time in that old-growth forest. So, that's not something we could recreate.
Yeah,
that's really something we hope to restore and maintain
exactly.
and preserve that history. Are we going to lose some trees along the way? Absolutely. It serves as
part.
A conversation piece like it is now. But, you know, I always tell my clients that, you know, a bad timber cut takes 30 years to grow back. A bad haircut takes 3 weeks. So it's extremely to be thoughtful. You know, and for folks to consult and talk with you guys like yourselves before they go in and just do something that changes it for decades.
Oh, that's hinge cutting to me.
Hinge cutting. See. How many times, I mean, we've been there where, hey, I went ahead and got started, or I did this for 2 years, I read this article, or I thought about doing this, so I applied it, and then I'm seeing persimmons and mulberries on the ground.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you hate you know, our job is to be open and honest for the client's best interest.
Yeah.
But you're not going to build a house without a architect or a builder, mm-hmm. you know, and mm-hmm. really that's what you guys are doing is building that framework behind what they want their property to be. And then we also align the reality of what it has the capability of being. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, sometimes we want, again, it goes back to, we want to human nature manipulate it or engineer it in a way that's forceful. And then, you know, being transparent to receive the message that sometimes, man, it just is not going to be a green tree reservoir, or it's just not going to be this, you know, prairie grassland.
Yeah.
So it's identifying what you kept bringing, what it was.
Yeah.
And then what you have the capability of maintaining. I mean, we talked about fruit orchards, you know, the other day, and that was a big conversation. They all sound great, and they look great, and you can read them in a magazine article, and you're going to see in the industry deer eating pears, but also understanding there's some maintenance involved with that. And that is that's the dedication side to how much you truly love it versus how much you want to engineer and manipulate it.
Yeah. For us, we've used the term or said make it something that it's not. A lot of times you see guys, I don't think you have many down here, but the glades, limestone glades, we have them, quite a few of them in Missouri, and they're very dry, arid, almost desert-like grasslands mm-hmm. On south-facing or west-facing slopes, and they're really rocky. And we see people trying to plant them, make them a food plot, and it's a very pathetic-looking food plot that requires a ton of fertilizer, a ton of lime, a ton of soil amendments to try and get it to be somewhat productive when they could have just left it in its native, improved the native limestone glade and had highly productive species that are native to that site. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
No, it's really important. And that's why, you know, having a management plan, a development plan, a habitat mm-hmm. plan, you know, however you want to coin it, is so important up front, because it's the blueprint of what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like if you were to go and start a business and you were to go to the bank to get a loan, they want to see a business plan. They want to see your thoughts on how to grow that business 5 years down the road. You know, mm-hmm. what are you going to do to make this successful? They've got to see that.
Yep.
To see that's worth and to, you know, to build it. There's, why would you enter into a long-term property management deal without the necessary plans, that framework you're talking about?
Yep.
To implement. And land is one of those key things, very crucial, because it's not like you can go and it takes sometimes a long time to fix problems. There's not one of those big pink erasers you can just scratch out and say, oops. It's not like you can go and level it off or do something and then turn around and say, ooh, I didn't like that. Let's go ahead and change that back.
Exactly. Yeah.
It's a natural resource that is, I mean, important for our water quality and soil quality and basically the foundation of life. Mm-hmm. But yet sometimes we manage it without any sort of plan and any understanding of the long-term effects.
Yeah, and I think capabilities and manipulation has distracted that. You know, a client recently, I was just really, you know, encouraging him to put a waterfowl impoundment in mm-hmm. where I thought nature would respond the best, because he was able to drill a well and access to a well. He wanted to see it on top of a ridge by his house. Mm. So he did. And, you know, the ducks are still landing down in the creek in the bottom where there's not near as much surface water or not flooded millet. But, you know, so Mother Nature has a real funny way of showing humility.
Oh, yeah.
And we see it a lot in our industry.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. And there's guidelines that she provides us, you know, telltale signs that to the right eye are like, okay, that's what should be here.
Yep.
And if we try and stray or again, make it something that it's not, that end result is going to be much less than what you anticipated mm-hmm. going into it. You wrote an article about a year ago, I think it was, or it was several months back, conservation preservation. You remember that article?
I do. Yeah, it was on one of our blogs.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
One of your blogs. What was that? It was a really interesting article. Do you remember it? We've talked about this on the podcast in the past, but
it was conservation and preservation and the kind of the look at managing the land with either mindset. You don't even remember it. He doesn't even remember this, no. Matt.
Man, I do remember that.
Oh, yeah. That's that article, that blog where he had somebody else write it and he put his name on it.
yeah.
Actually, I downloaded it off Wikipedia and I put my name on it like we do everything else. Actually, the name of the company is not Nature's Eye. The L is silent. It's actually Nature's Lie. So, but no, I do. I do remember that. It, you know, and I don't know if I can speak directly to that article, but I remember having that conversation. You know, I have the opportunity to work with a close friend. She's worked full time for Nature's Eye, and she's in our content marketing department. Emily Courtney. She writes a lot of our blogs, and we have, you know, conversations as I'm going down the road or just mm-hmm. getting out of a deer stand. But when I can think clearly about, you know, these most important topics, I'll have a conversation with her, and she'll take all that and craft it out in a way that creates a story. And I right. remember that was one of the discussions her and I had. And conservation, you know, just thinking outside of remembering those exact words, but conservation is preservation.
Yeah.
We're preserving we're preserving something that was really already created, and sometimes we have to put it back in a way in order to have it where it's preserved. And I think there's a direct correlation between legacy and preservation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because that's really what you guys are doing by
it's
maintaining.
I think it's the pride associated with the preservation.
And I think in this day and age, some people get caught in preservation as in don't touch, let nature do its thing, which for me is if you don't touch, let nature do its thing, we have manipulated the native landscape so much by removing prescribed fire, removing the fire, lightning strike fires, removing that type of management or grazing, the two main disturbances that happen naturally. We've removed that. We've introduced non-native species to where preservation is one of those things where we're preserving the native landscape, but we still have to manage it. We can't just walk away and say it's going to fix itself.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And we've been introduced, unfortunately, by exotic and invasive species over that time. So having the mindset of preserve, don't touch it.
Yeah.
Just let it do its thing. These have been here for hundreds of years. That's not exactly true.
If you, on your main projects here in East Texas, if you were to walk away for 5 years, you'd come back and you'd see understories of Chinese privet.
Absolutely. And Chinese tallow tree in certain areas. Cedar tree is becoming more and more invasive in these areas. So, and you're right. And it's really important to think beyond that. You know, there's a, you know, naturalist or preservation or purist is just a term that, you know, man has created and defined and like everything else.
Yeah,
labeled.
So, you know, what that truly means is in the mindset of the conservationist, and those are the ones that have to improve it in a healthy way in order for a way to preserve it, because unfortunately Earth is dynamic and things are changing all the time, and you know,
constantly,
and they really have over the past 100 years. And that's what we're, I think, doing, is trying to educate ourselves and others. And that's the great things about groups like QDMA. You know, it's being nimble and constantly educating ourselves first and others, and being open-minded to things changes. Do adapt and things do change. So what's the latest and greatest research or things that we found out that, you know, helps us conserve and then preserve things in a way that can be here after we're gone?
That's right.
Definitely.
Absolutely. I know we got to wrap up here soon, and Matt and I got to hit the road, but we've got two more things we have to cover, our plant and animals. Mm. And we had some interesting encounters, and so we're going to keep this Texas-based. I've got a bird in mind, and we have a plant in mind that we encountered a lot. It's the beauty berry.
Okay.
And you and I talked, or we all three talked about it while we were walking through the landscape the other day. Tell us a little bit about beauty berry that you know of, and I'm going to read some more stuff as soon as you're done.
Yep. Man, it's great. Aesthetically, you know, it's known for its purple clusters.
Beautiful.
It's American vibrant. Beauty berry is the name of it. The name in the front, America, you know, is pretty awesome within itself. But American beauty berries, Calycarpa americana. Mm-hmm. I believe the family's name is Calycarpinaceae, I believe. And there's a lot of different songbirds that depend on the berry. So that's one of the first, you know, things that is attractive is the clusters of purple berries.
Yep.
So the birds depend on the berries, and they get distributed easily because of that. And it's a forest understory plant, you know, typically.
I'll read you the native habitat right now. It says found in woods, most moist thickets, wet slopes, low, rich bottomlands, and at the edge of swamps and piney woods, post oak woods, blackland woodlands, and coastal woodlands, moist woods, coastal plains, swamp edges, and bottomlands.
You covered it all.
That's it.
So it
pretty
is
encompassing.
It's throughout, you know, being from Alabama and also Mississippi. It's, you know, dense in the understory there, and then now in East Texas here.
The deer absolutely love it.
With ample light.
Or necessary light.
Yeah, it can be shade tolerant as well.
Very shade tolerant.
It does well with fire. You know, you're scarifying those seeds. Mm-hmm. And as we saw some two-year-old, some stands that I have under a two-year-old burn rotation, and, you know, we saw plenty of 3 to 4 foot tall beauty berry. But one thing about it is it's a good representation of deer populations. A lot of the stems are browsed by, you know, white-tailed deer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
On the ends as well as, you know, the leaves. But throwing it way back to usage by Native Americans is it has a chemical compound in it called calicarpinol, which is a chemical extract and for repelling mosquitoes.
Yep.
And, you know, whether this is true or not, logically it can be believed, but Native Americans use that as a natural insect repellent. So
I would.
As I bow hunt, I crush it up and I rub it. I also wear a loin cloth, and which is kind of weird too, but still, whatever. I ride in on my Kia.
Yeah.
But so, you know, it's really cool. But also, just thinking about nature, like we've talked about, another really cool fact about that is a lot of people use it, like in aesthetic native plants around their camps or cabins.
Right.
It's
low
maintenance. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, it's beautiful. I've seen it at Bass Pro Shop landscapes.
Requires little fertilizer or any fertilizer.
That's correct. It's got a neon green leaf to it.
Yeah.
And also it's used a lot in like flower and floral arrangements, like vases and stuff that,
right.
you know, I'm sure you guys are really into. But
I love.
Yeah. That's right.
Actually, go pick up the
it accents well with the black-eyed Susan.
Yeah.
Just stop.
To me, it's the wonderful thing about it is that there's advantages to us for mosquito repellent, but there's huge advantages because it can grow in semi-shade or even pretty good shaded woodlands.
Pretty shaded, yeah.
It can grow in full sunlight. It provides berries for the birds. It provides forage for the deer. It provides structure for the deer. It's one of those species that it does a lot of things.
It does. And it kind of gives that umbrella effect mm-hmm. for ground species too.
Yeah.
I've seen ground nesting birds mm-hmm. get under those because it has that canopy cover. Yeah.
So my bird, keeping it Texas themed, the painted bunting.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Beauty.
And the painted bunting is one of the most beautiful birds in North America, if not the most beautiful bird in North America with all its colors. But it's a shrub species bird. So why should we care about the painted bunting if we're a white-tailed deer hunter or a white-tailed deer manager? Because shrubby species are an intricate part of healthy habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to the – look at the American beauty berry, shrubby species that's great for the deer, great for the birds, And then you have the painted bunting, which thrives on this shrubby species. So,
are you saying painted bunny?
Yeah.
Painted bunny.
Painted bunny. Yeah.
Okay.
Right. The painted bunting.
Okay.
So if you're seeing those on your property on a consistent basis, you're knowing that you have that shrub-like landscape, or you're having those shrub species on your
man,
land.
Man, that's great. You know, and one of the things that I really need to improve strength on is ornithology, mm-hmm. and that's interesting. And that, you know, speaking to myself here, that's an integral part to what we do, just as important as pollinators are.
Yep.
And I seem to overlook that, you know, sometimes in a way. So thanks for mentioning that.
It's often easy to, but just like they can be used as indicator species. Oh, if a painted bunting is here, I know that X habitat is also present, and that habitat supports
good point.
this, and this.
Good point.
So they can kind of be a register. Okay, I know I'm on the right track if you're mm-hmm. starting to see these other species.
Yep. Yep.
Maybe
no,
you haven't seen the results of the whitetail, you know, come into the habitat and utilize it like you thought, but just wait, it will, because others are.
That's a good point. And the bird watching market is huge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's very important.
Definitely.
You know, for the French name for the painted bunting, I'm not even going to try to pronounce it, but it means without equal because of the amount
beauty.
Of colors it has.
Oh, wow.
So.
That's interesting.
Yep.
So we always highlight, since I know you listen all the time, I'll just, you know, refresh your memory. We always highlight one plant and one animal on the podcast.
Okay.
Just as and typically they're non-game species to bring in, mm-hmm. you know,
awareness
to, hey, there's other cool animals out there. There's other cool plants out there that need and honestly require the same attention that we give deer, turkey, ducks, hogs, all this stuff. We need to be shining some light on them too, because we are conservationists because of species.
Man, that is like awesome that. You guys, you know? Do that seriously.
So yeah, mine was I don't know, we've covered monarch butterfly, we've covered
an otter,
red we did a full podcast where we just went through a whole bunch of them. Red-headed woodpecker, that
non-game
goes with the
species.
You know, you talked about the fire and killing some trees, and we noticed it when we were on the
David
property
Crockett.
Big dead tree standing, and most people would say, oh, that's not aesthetically pleasing. That's pretty ugly. But there's so many species that require
tons of cavity
those.
Nesters in those.
Home.
That's it.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there's a purpose for it all. So anyway,
would you rather.
Okay.
Would you rather have cold Mexican food or go hog hunting in downpouring rain?
Wow.
I mean, you know, if life
we
just,
did
if
both,
just
by the way.
Those to you. Yeah.
We did both.
I'm going to give you the painting bunting answer, and they're both unequal. I would be a chameleon and adapt to both.
Oh,
and
wow.
This was quite an adventure for sure.
That's
this
it.
Was fun.
Yeah. I thought we were going to get rained in and stuck at the lake house.
Yeah.
But we made it out.
And by the way, you know, we were pretty exhausted. What a mad game of
ping pong
last night.
That's right.
It got down
That's
dirty.
Right.
That
yeah.
was unbelievable.
That's it. I haven't played ping pong
I think we
in
all
forever.
Surprised each other, too. Like, there were some good volleys back and forth.
Yeah.
It really was.
I agree. I was really proud of myself.
It's been a few years, but after a couple stretch sessions, I really
Whatever.
Got into my game.
I bet you he plays ping pong every time he goes to the lake house.
That's
Actually,
right.
I start by playing it on my Game Boy.
Okay.
As
yeah,
a gamer.
Yeah.
And then I become reality.
Oh, man.
And then you probably finish on the Xbox at night.
Exactly. Yeah, a hacky before. Sack up against the wall.
Yeah.
And I have a poster of a painted bunny that I do that.
Oh, that's funny. Well, man, wow. We appreciate you coming on, and hopefully, how can people find you?
Yeah.
Before
talk about
I forget.
Nature's Eye.
Man, we are our corporate office here in Lufkin, Texas. Anybody ever comes through, I mean, you've seen it. It's cool culture with
awesome.
A lot of farms.
Yeah.
You know, it's an open door deal. You know, we love spending time just talking with people that love what we do. So, for one, in person, our corporate office here in Lufkin, Texas, that's one way. The other is just, you know, naturebasedlife.com. I don't even know if I've mentioned that to you guys. That is our parent company main webpage that we launched last week.
Nice.
Because it wasn't just, you know, Nature's Eye Consulting, Nature's Eye Media. It's more of that nature-based life and that mm-hmm. lifestyle. So there we'll be sharing content, you guys' podcast, you know, and some of the things that we're going to be doing together. Be on that. So that's the really the easiest way to what we do, as well as, you know, like everybody else, some social media platforms.
Awesome.
Love it. Love it.
Check
please,
it out.
Please, yeah, please. And you got Facebook, you got Instagram, all that stuff.
It's all there, man.
Nature's
and,
Eye.
Man, thanks for, I mean, main thing is, seriously, thanks for one, taking the time to be here, have me in on that, and you guys being an open door to be like, hey, let's, you know, we all love the same thing. Let's,
yeah,
let's sit and chat and just do this brainstorm. Stuff. And yeah. Man, this for me, this won't be the last one, man. If you have me on again, this
that's
is
right.
awesome.
It won't.
But we're going to be sharing some campfires together and
hacky sack games.
Some duck blinds, hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Catered Mexican. And hey, how about that pizza I had delivered to the office?
I never had that pizza. Yeah.
It's called Domino's.
Domino's. Yeah. We're going to have to look and see if we have any of those. Yeah.
And the sandwiches, you know, we pride ourselves on Texas hospitality.
Yeah.
As you can tell, I don't mean to brag, but. You know, we really roll out the red carpet.
Everything's bigger in Texas.
That's right, and that's why I took you guys to Subway.
Yeah,
that's right.
First day.
I looked for the footlong just to see if it was a little bit bigger here in Texas.
I measured it.
Yeah, still the same.
Yep.
Yeah.
Round two.
All right, guys. Awesome. We hope you enjoyed it. Be sure to check out Blake and his team and Nature's Eye, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
Thanks.